You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost. Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ow, from Brooklyn, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental. I'm Andrew Wiebe, in my apartment, in Bed-Stuy, with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Charlie Davies, Matt Doyle. Ah, what's up, boys? How you feeling? Today's a big day. It's Dearly Beloved Day. We're going back to the past, to Tampa Bay Mutiny, to Miami Fusion, to Chivas USA. Only one of those three that I watch live, and that is certainly the team you're repping, Charlie, Chivas USA. I wish I had my jersey. Got the old school logo. I think that one has the gold lettering on the back. That is a classic kit if I've ever seen one.
It's
well done.
So,
nice
it's
threads.
Super classic. Super classic. And it's got question on the back. Mm. An automatic Chivas USA legend. Yeah. And also Mount Rushmore member.
And a Mount Rushmore member of ETR Wednesday Night Trivia as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, uh-huh. Yes.
MVP.
Oh,
yeah. He's actually more like the MVP. Yeah. I mean, the rest of us are just trying to get on his level. Can we make a decision right now? I mean, we haven't asked anybody, but I guess we can just assume that like people want to be a part of this too. Extra Time Trivia Night, Wednesdays on Instagram Live, the MLS channel, 7 p.m. Eastern. Who are we bringing up? Is it Benny? Is it Dax?
He's been there quite a bit.
I know. I want somebody who's been dedicated to the cause, and I feel like maybe Benny's that guy. Plus,
I like that Mo showed up with like 5 minutes left and was like clearly Googling answers, trying to help out in the comments.
Google machine. He was a Google machine.
Yeah, I'm holding that against him. I told him, I texted him. I was like, I was just throwing just garbage in the chat to try to push you down so that they would not notice and see you saying Bronco. Because there's nothing that made me more angry on that night than that. I think we go Benny. I'll shoot him a text. Who's going to be on the other side? Who's the Extra Time host? It's been a while for you on the guessing front, Dave. Sasha Kleshchen is coming with questions, I hear. Do you want to be a part of this? Should I jump
Charlie,
in?
How hard is it?
Actually, Sasha and I all weekend have been going pretty ham and digging deep.
I think
to stump you guys.
I can take this one. We can go Maccabi energy with Benny.
I like that.
Yeah, bring it back to the day. Strength, man.
So we'll get those questions from Sasha. Get in the comments section. Talk trash. Help them guess. Do whatever you want to do. It's a lot of fun. 7 p.m. Eastern. Extra Time Trivia Nights on Wednesday nights on the MLS Instagram Live. So come over there like, I don't know, 6:55. Start sitting on it. Mm-hmm. That way you don't miss anything.
Also, I think Anders put this in somewhere, but it was stated that every Wednesday night, Charlie would have a bottle of wine delivered to each of our abodes so that we could drink it with the game, because he's choosing the, you know, what style of grape and wine we go with. So Charlie, just if you need our addresses, let me know, because I didn't know if you had that already.
I missed that. I guess I missed that section. Yeah.
He said that you were the one who proposed that. But I didn't know if you had my address. So I didn't know.
You texted to me.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I got you.
Perfect. Big Money Davies. I like a full-bodied red. I prefer a Malbec. So if you'd like to send that over.
You look like a Merlot guy.
I gotta change my look then, because I'm definitely not a Merlot guy. Big show today. Thomas Rongen, the head coach of the 1996 Tampa Bay Mutiny, will be with us in just 1 second. He was the coach of the year. He had Pibe Valderrama. Roy Lassiter banged in 27. So we'll get some old school stories from him there. And then Brian Dunseth. Dunny is joining us. He spent about 6 to 8 months in the last year of the Miami Fusion, their Supporters Shield winning team, a team that had Preki, a team that had Diego Serna, Chris Henderson. I mean, up and down, this team had some legends. He will share some stories with us. And then we'll talk about Chivas USA, too. No guests there, but they certainly have some legends in their short and glorious, sometimes inglorious, history as well. Should we get right to it, guys? Get the Thomas Rongen?
Let's do it.
Pleasure now to have Thomas Rongen on Extra Time. Coach, how you doing?
Doing well, guys. In Fort Lauderdale, that's home away from home for me. That's where I played the longest in the NESL. Obviously, I was born in Amsterdam, but Fort Lauderdale is my home in the U.S., and that's where I'm at right now, similar to you guys, doing stuff from home. you know, try to stay active and work through this incredible, you know, global crisis that I, even in my lifetime, and I'm a lot older than you guys, I've never seen before. So it's different. It's trying.
Yeah, certainly trying. We're trying to distract ourselves here on this show by digging into the past, and you've got some special moments. We're actually going to hit Miami Fusion after this, speaking of Fort Lauderdale, but we'll save that conversation for them. This is Tampa Bay Mutiny time, baby, and we got to give that 1996 squad some love. You were the MLS Coach of the Year that year, finished atop the Eastern Conference, DC United, the only team that could take you down on that run. Tell us how you got this job of what would be the Supporters Shield winning team in 96. How did this all happen for you, Thomas?
After the NESL folded, most foreign players went back. And I felt I wanted to stay because I knew that soccer eventually would be something that people would take to. So I taught languages at Berlitz. I was a soccer locker, which was a small store I owned. I became a coach in high school level, the Nova Southeastern, which at that time was NIA, now Division II. I rolled into the 94 World Cup as the liaison for the Dutch national team, which was an incredible experience. And that's where I connected with Farouk Qureshi, who was the venue director in Orlando during that World Cup. And we hit it off. And I was one of the candidates in 1996 to interview for the Tampa Bay Mutiny. And I ended as a young coach in this inaugural year, leading a group of men through a season that was obviously very, very special. So, you know, I'm incredibly proud that I was part of that first year. That was, as I said again, something that I will remember forever.
When you're the head coach of this team, when did you find out you have Carlos Valderrama on your team? When do you know that Pibe is coming and you get to coach him?
Yeah. Well, initially, Andrew, I didn't want him. Yeah, I know, it sounds crazy, but I was so enamored through my playing experience and my coaching experience or as a player to be touched by Rinus Michels, probably still the best coach in the last century. Johan Cruyff, who I became very close to, who inspired me to continue to play and coach. So total football with not a traditional 10, so to speak, didn't fit my philosophy. So when Sunil Gulati told me, you got El Pibe Valderrama. Initially, I wasn't pleased. Don't get me wrong. I'd seen him in 90. I'd seen that team beat Brazil and Argentina in Argentina and Brazil, the team that was the favorite to win the World Cup, obviously, when they lost to the United States. And we were a league-operated team. As you know, there were 12 teams, with two, Dallas and the Tampa Bay Mutiny, had no ownership. So I lost that battle with Sunil within 30 seconds. And I'm glad I did, by the way, because Carlos Valderrama ended up being the player that we all know. Exceptional, brilliant. I don't know what other adjectives I can use for him. And he became, you know, the backbone, the architect for this team in 1996 that was had a very special run.
Thomas, 1996, you get El Pibe. You didn't initially want him, you get him. And you have Roy Lassiter. It's your first professional coaching experience. How are you able to communicate with them and get them to buy into your system? And for a lot of the millennials right now, they don't really grasp the fact of how gifted El Pibe was. Can you tell them exactly what he did so well?
Yeah, that's a great question, Charlie. I was taught and self-taught to a certain extent that democracy is important in the locker room and on the field, to a certain extent. I was the boss. Yes, discipline was very important, but I engaged with players in the way we would play. And I had to really take 10 players literally for days on time to convince them that Carlos Valderrama will not defend. We know that. And you guys have to buy into doing a little bit more extra work, because when it turns over in transition, Carlos El Pibe Valderrama was absolutely brilliant. Like a chess, moves ahead of. I played with Cruyff and some special players, and he's in that category of seeing things, Charlie, that other players didn't see. So for me, it became very important early on to focus on the attacking side of the ball and work on patterns of play that I learned through Cruyff and Meagles. And we had six patterns of play while we were building out the back that would use El Pibe Valderrama and eventually as the architect to spring Roy Lassiter, to spring a Stevie Ralston. I'm talking about Stevie Ralston. Nobody knew about Stevie Ralston. He became the rookie of the year. More assists than anybody else over time, obviously. And for me to get all these guys on the same page and the questions of Ralston, Lassiter, Martin Vazquez, who was behind, obviously, Carlos Valderrama, and Clay Coyman and Frank Yellop, I understood how to build the team through an axis and have one special player on the attacking side of the ball with vision and one of the greatest passers in the game ever, Carlos Valderrama. I just had to make sure that Roy Lassiter, Beppe Galderisi, who played underneath Roy Lassiter, were able to understand what Valderrama's strength and weaknesses were. And his strengths were one-touch passing. And after 3 or 4 weeks in preseason doing patterns, we knew exactly if the left forward would tuck in Charlie to make sure there wasn't a forward pass centrally, vertically to Roy Lassiter, then Stevie Ralston was on. If the left forward would cheat a little bit because it didn't want to get Ralston to get behind him, the through ball was on for Roy Lassiter. Or the third option on the right side was find Beppe Galderisi. One touch to Carlos Valderrama was very brilliant in eluding people so he could face the field. And then, as I said again, he rarely stroked the ball with his shoelaces. It was all inside of the foot with precision that Roy Lassiter just basically had to tap in most of his goals that weren't broken till what, 3 years ago, maybe 2 years ago by Martinez of Atlanta. So going forward was special, but don't forget the Clay Coymans of the world. You know, mm-hmm. Don't forget, you know, what are we talking about? Mount Rushmore? Are we talking about Mount Rushmore?
Yeah.
Okay, we're talking about the birth of Stevie Ralston, the growth of Clay Coyman, the captain, a guy that went to Mexico and became the captain of Pumas, which is unbelievable for a Yank to do, obviously. The development of Roy Lassiter and the preservation of Mr. El Pibe Valderrama. Those were the four, basically, foundations that represented, obviously, those presidents. Although saying that, Lewis and Clark should have been on there. Yeah. You know, Frankie Yellop and Martin Vazquez. Chief Red Cloud. He could have been there. It was Ivan McKinley. Crazy Horse. Frankie Hayduke. Buffalo Bill Cody. Steve Pittman. And the list goes on. What a team. Eight guys represented the East in the All-Star game. And I'm so proud that these guys were able to do what they did that year. And put MLS somewhat on the map with attractive football. We were the highest scoring team in MLS. And that was just part of my thinking and philosophy, which I've never really strayed from.
I wanted to talk about that, though, because number one scoring team, top in the East. You mentioned Lassiter's record, the quality. How much did you enjoy watching that team play? How much that experience over that year? Because it kind of came out of nowhere that now you have a league and all of a sudden this team's firing on all cylinders. How much did you enjoy being a part of that year?
It was special. And after a while, similar to when I make the transition from New England to Washington, D.C., D.C. United, when I won a championship in 99, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. It was the first thing that Bruce Arena told me. And I rolled the ball out. I kept the team happy, hungry, and yes, we had rules and regulation, but I had a very mature team. I just mentioned some of those guys. Mark Dougherty, Frank Yellow, Clay Coyman, Martin Vazquez, El Pibe Valderrama, Roy Lassiter, Beppe Galderisi, obviously Frankie Hayduke and Stevie Ralston, Ivan McKinley, Steve Pittman, Evan Weiss on the left side. An older group, a more experienced group with a few young players that self-motivated, that self-governed, and that was a team that wanted to showcase their talent. So I tweaked certain things. And yes, we worked each and every day in practice on things that I could control and they could control. But when the Saturday came around and the ball rolled out, I knew we had done our job. So I basically sat back and try to sneak a cigarette and try to enjoy the ride, which it wasn't the first year.
Thomas, I had you as a head coach for the under 20 national team. Clay Coyman was your assistant. So there were some epic stories there. But take me back to 96. What was it like traveling on the road with LP Bay and Roy Lasser? What are those stories like? Bring it to light.
Well, I mean, I had an interesting group, a group that I find out halfway through the season would have lunch at Mons Venus. you know, that was an occurrence. This group was very, very tight, Charlie. This group, after the game on Sundays, would go to Carlos Valderrama's house, who had a pool, which I didn't, again, know until halfway through the season, and would get hammered, basically. They partied hard. They played hard. And you know me, Charlie. I give a lot of freedom. Eventually, you know, you hang yourself or you don't. And there was a few cases where I stepped in. But overall, it was a fun experience. It was an experience of a group of players that didn't fear going anywhere. I remember the Rose Bowl, 80,000 people, doubleheader, Mexico, U.S., L.A. Galaxy versus Tampa Bay Mutiny. And guys, before games, would start doing, you know, if we score, because we will score, and we might score more than one, what do? So we had the airplane with Roy Lasser and Carlos Valderrama behind and Martin Vasquez, and they all joined in. They had fun. As I said again, they partied hard. You might interpret that any which way you want.
Yeah.
That year, with the exception of finding Carlos Valderrama once, $10,000, and Ivan McKinley, $2,000, because that was the difference in their contracts. I thought it was only fair if they would only get deducted like 1% of their earnings. Outside of that, and Frankie Hayden, you know, marrying a stripper, you know, it was pretty interesting.
Who was the biggest personality on the team, Frankie? Who was the guy that you were like, the wild card here? I have no idea what's going to happen, but he's also vastly, vastly entertaining.
Well, I think either Frankie or Ivan McKinley. On the other end, you had Clay Coyman that Charlie just mentioned. You know, he, before practice, let's rock and roll, boys. That's what it was. It was a rock and roll band going on the road with meeting some groupies. You know, in 1996, it was all new, it was funny, but whatever. You know, so we enjoyed the experience as best as we could. Most foreign players enjoy being here. And if you go back all the way to Jorn Cruyff, George Best, Pele, Beckenbauer, the first thing they say, nobody really recognizes us. So these guys were able to do certain things back then, which probably they couldn't get away with now. But I said, Ivan McKinley and Frankie Hayduk, be it from playing music, Croatian music, in the locker room, to being extremely funny, which is great too. Because if you go through some tough times, those are the guys like Clay Coyman. Let's dig deep. Let's go to Frankie Hayduk. You know, Kalabunga, baby. You know, let's do it a certain way. So I had this very unique, eclectic group of guys that just bought into doing things right. And that's great feeling for a coach when a group basically guides themselves. That's a tribute to the personalities and the professionalism at the end of the day that this group displayed.
I want to know more about Clay Coyman because I came in a little late. I didn't really know him as a player, but when I went around and I talked to people about, for instance, the team, the guys that they hate playing against, Coyman's there. The guys that have personality, Coyman's there. Tell us about him, the place he had on the team, who he was, and just people that may not remember history or came to it late, help them appreciate this sort of legend of eras past.
Yes, and that's a great question because true. I didn't know much about Clay Coyman, with the exception that he started the first game in the 94 World Cup. Did not start thereafter because I think Fernando Clavijo became, after that, the right fullback. He played right fullback for the U.S. national team in 94, first World Cup game. And then I did some research. This guy went to Mexico at a fairly young age. At that time, we didn't have professional football here. So a lot of these guys had to either stay here and play semi-pro in the APSL or whatever it might be. But Kooijman went to Mexico as a gringo. He looks like a gringo, believe me. And in 4 years, the captain of one of the biggest institutions in Mexico, which was Pumas. And I said, if he can do that, he's got certain natural leadership skills that I need. He's got certain nasty physical attributes that you can use. Back then, the rules were not as strict. So, yes, he was the enforcer. And, yes, I also was very keenly aware that I needed a translator with El Pibe Valderrama early on. Clay spoke both Spanish and English. So did Martin Vasquez. I was driven to Martin Vasquez for playing purposes, but also to have two guys on the team that were fluent in both languages, which really helped the transition for El Pibe Valderrama greatly. And as I said again, these two guys were instrumental for me to get tactical stuff across to El Pibe in a very quick way in terms of translation on the field, even during games that would take a whistle, you know, that most guys would recognize and would look at me or glance at me. And I had different whistles for everybody. This was El Pibe. It was Clay Kooijman. So, you know, in 80,000 stadium, even that allowed me, also saved my vocal cords, by the way. My whistle was a good way. But you're right, Clay Kooijman became a very important member in the top three, I would say, of that team in that particular year.
How disappointing was it for you, Thomas, to have the season end the way it did? Because this team was rolling.
That hurts, and it still hurts. But give credit to Bruce Arena. You know, he got better. I stayed status quo. I had a chance. No, I made one change. I got Beppe Gondarisi, which made us a little bit better. But I needed one more link somewhere, and I didn't pursue it aggressively enough in order to make the team better, because we were good during the regular season. But in one or two off games, DC, with the addition of Jaime Moreno, with the addition of Tony Sane, with the addition of two, three, or four important players that Bruce Arena brought in through the middle and late in that season, made DC United the champions, and correctly so. On the day, they over two legs, they were more cunning and better.
So where would you have upgraded exactly if you could make one change in that 1996 team? Where are you making that addition?
Probably, I need the burden of Roy Lasseter to score almost every game was too high. I needed somebody else. Either off, I had some players on the bench, but Nelson Vargas, you know, that could make a little bit of a difference. If I played, didn't start Evan Wise on the left side could change the game. But I needed somebody else to step up next to Roy Lasseter to take the burden off him a little bit, because after a while, Bruce was smart enough. He had Carlos Llamosa and Agus and Richie Williams, you know, really making it hard in Valderrama. We couldn't get Roy on track in three or four big games. And I knew that I needed either somebody else next to Roy, and it was Beppe Gondarisi. Beppe had his limitations. He was a little bit older. And while the ball was traveling fast, Charlie, I needed somebody like you, to be real honest, because in transition, the way we went forward, it was two, three passes at the most in order to get into the 18-yard box. And Beppe, who normally became part of the buildup, just didn't have the legs to get there anymore. And right. We were predominantly with Stevie Ralston. It was sometimes hard for Ivan McKinley and Evan Wise, who weren't really natural attackers, to make those runs in the box as well. So we became a little bit easier to defend for teams who finally figured out how to play us, and a bigger, maybe bigger station, a little bit higher up the field that could give us something in the air, underground. I'm not saying a Brian McBride type, but that's the kind of player could have helped us, or another one that would have been explosive enough to get there while the ball is traveling faster than most of our players, our humans, basically.
The details still vivid in your mind 25 years later, Thomas. Last one, we'll let you go, okay? What do you hope people remember about this 96 team and about the Tampa Bay Mutiny in general?
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll, baby.
Perfect ending. Perfect ending. Thomas Rodden, the 1996 Coach of the Year. The Mutiny, the Supporters' Shield winners, and I got to believe we're putting them in our extra time greatest team of all time bracket. Thomas, thank you so much for your time, man. Stay safe. We'll be seeing you soon, all right?
Same to you guys. Peace.
Peace.
Oh, talking about Bob Rushmore. Here's my man.
Oh, man. What a shirt that is, by the way. That is epic.
All right. See you guys.
See you, Thomas. Right. Thank you so much for your time, man. Always
Thanks,
great
Thomas.
Talking
great
to you.
Great to see you.
Woo, that was a trip. That was a trip down memory lane, huh, Charlie? Drug, sex, rock and roll. That is the Tampa Bay Mutiny of the early and mid-90s.
Here's my time. Bet. Here's my bet. Time. You could literally ask Thomas Rangan to like describe anything, and he would say drug, sex, and rock and roll. Anything. You'd say, what do you think of this science textbook that I just brought in? And he'd go, drug, sex, and rock and roll, baby.
Woo, that's the best science class I've ever been a part of. By the way, MLS Classics Remix. If you want to see that 96 Mutiny team in action on Wednesday, 4 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to host this thing. We got Miles Joseph, Tab Ramos, Giovanni Savarese, Metro Stars, Mutiny, YouTube, and Facebook, MLS, both of those. Tune in, watch the game. I'm pretty sure a lot of the people that listen to this show never saw this team play, including myself, live. So let's do it all together. Another reminder for you, of course, you're listening to Extra Time Mondays, Thursdays, but on Tuesdays, the call-up is out. Zarek Valentin and Jeff Atteneller are on the show this week. You can catch it at 7 p.m. Eastern. And MLS Kick Around is also every single day at noon on Twitter. Tuesday, Kevin Egan and Dan Gargan of that Atlanta United broadcast team. Well, let's set our Mount Rushmore here for the Mutiny. Mm-hmm. Pibe, Carlos Valderrama, in stone. Roy Lassiter, in stone. Steve Ralston would be, but he can't be there because we put him on New England's.
Mamadou Diallo, 3.
All right, give the case for Mamadou Diallo. You and Doyle, come on, go back and forth here. Remind people.
He was an MLS All-Star MVP back in the day when MLS All-Star was awesome, when it was East versus West, and he was a beast. He was talking about a big tank, 26 goals and 4 assists.
Yeah, that's the
26 goals. I mean,
that's the case. That's the case for Mamadou Diallo. It was a 52-point team, so it wasn't a Supporters' Shield caliber team, but they weren't far off of it, and he produced. He produced at a best 11 borderline MVP level. And here's the thing: up until Sasha Kljestan a couple of years ago, there was only one person in MLS history with 20 or more assists in a season. It was Carlos Valderrama, and it was the year 2000. He had 26 assists, and that was the Mamadou Diallo year. Those two guys, they just scored every time. Every time Valderrama was on the ball in midfield, it felt like Diallo was going to be, 60 yards away in a minute, putting the ball in the back of the net. It's just how it worked with that team.
Who's the fourth for you, Doyle? If we have Pibe, Lassiter, and Mamadou Diallo, who is that fourth? Because we can't have Ralston in here.
Yeah.
He would be it pretty easily.
Very easily.
Easy. Leads in assists.
There's only two options.
Valderrama leads in assists, but all time Ralston second. Sorry. How could I forget PB in that sense? Continue.
I honestly felt, no disrespect to Martin Vazquez, but what Clay Koeman was, like, he gave that early team, that 96 team, which I think we all agree is going to be the best Tampa Bay team, he gave that team its personality in ways that Pibe didn't. I think it's Clay.
I go with Doyle all day. And Martin Vazquez played the most minutes that year, 2,700 minutes with 5 goals and 6 assists. And he was an important player, especially with as Thomas Rangan talked about, his ability to help Pibe understand what he wanted.
Yeah.
Thomas Rangan wanted. But Clay Koeman did the same thing, and he was a beast. I had him for an assistant coach. I know exactly how he was. He was just one of those guys who was no nonsense. You didn't want to mess with him. So Clay Koeman definitely deserves to be.
And that was the thing. You needed to have both of those guys. If Pibe was going to be in midfield running everything, which he was, you needed to have that defensive midfielder like Martin, who would do all the dirty work, all the defensive work to clean up around him, but you needed that hard man on the back line who was going to set a tone anytime somebody was breaking through. And for that Tampa team, it worked. Like, they were really, really good, except it's not modern soccer. You're going to watch this game. You should watch this game on Wednesday. It looks nothing like modern soccer. And the story throughout 1996 was they would smash anyone. But then when they came up against that DC United team, who, remember, DC struggled through most of that year. But whenever they came up to the against that DC team who did play modern soccer, DC ripped them apart. And then in the playoffs, it was supposed to be the big battle between DC and Tampa Bay. And DC just absolutely murder him. It was brutal. But it's fun. It'll be fun to watch. You should watch this game on Wednesday because it's a different, it's just a different game from what we see these days.
Just as excited to see the Metro Stars in that era as well. Clay Koeman, I think he's in. Done. I don't want to be the one to tell him. I don't want to be the one that he reaches out to should he see that he's not on this Mount Rushmore. Yep. So he is there. He is there. All right, let's do Miami Fusion next. Four glorious years at Lockhart Stadium. Brian Dunseth is our man to help take us through it. All right, let's talk some Miami Fusion. We're doing it with a guy who was there for a hot second, but long enough to get the feel of a Supporters Shield winning team in South Florida, Brian Dunseth. You know him from SiriusXM, from RSL broadcasts, from, I don't know, Dunny, basically anywhere I have turned my eyes in Major League Soccer. How you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm good. Wherever I can continue the swindle as well. By the way, I now if I knew we were wearing jerseys, I would have thrown a Miami Fusion jersey on.
You have one? Well, I mean, you have time. You have time to go get it.
Hold on. You have a long sleeve Miami Fusion?
You want me to go get it?
No, I want you to explain why you have a long sleeve Miami Fusion.
Because
okay, so it's the only one he didn't trade.
No, because I'm one of those old guys that I loved wearing long sleeves. Like, there, it doesn't matter how hot it was. It was one of those where, like, when you could pull your sleeves down and hold them at the bottom of your hands, there was something like, all right, it's game time. Like, I'm going to crush somebody. Like, I'm going to win my header. I'm going to go up. Like, I'm going to get my first confident couple of touches. I'm going to hit a 60-yard diagonal. It was just something like, I never felt like when I had a short sleeve on, I was just like, great. Shirt's tucked in. Kind of look chunky. Not really feeling this look. But like the long sleeves, I was like, yeah, game on. I'm ready to play.
So I just, so you know, I've been watching a documentary about the New Zealand All Blacks. They do the haka pregame to get jacked. Brian Dunseth looks like a fifth grader who doesn't want to be there. That's what gets him going.
Did you ever cut the thumb hole? You know what I'm talking about? You get hole cut, then you don't have to hold it down. Because that seems like a lot of work.
But I was also the guy. So Columbus Crew, I don't know if you'll remember this. This is like right around 2002, 2003. Mm-hmm. You remember when Adidas kind of did like the mesh on the side and they were like breathable?
Yep.
Except when you pull the jersey over, it was like this second layer of like a shirt that sucked.
Yeah.
So I just flip it inside out and I would cut the layer out inside.
Mm-hmm.
So next thing you know, like it was myself and McBride and I think who else did it? Somebody else did it. Maybe Frankie. But then all of a sudden, like McBride, first time he wore it, like somebody raked him and like he had this huge tear because it was like mesh tear away. And so I was like, well, I'm not ripped like that guy. So I'm going to stop cutting this inside out because I'm not going to look like that if mine tears away. So yeah, but always long sleeves. I always want to rock long sleeves.
This, because you brought it up, speaking of inside, I've always thought of this and I never have actually asked a professional soccer player this question. Because when you were a kid, you used to get the pro soccer shorts with the little, see, the thing inside, like a bathing suit?
Yeah, you cut them out. Real? A lot of people cut them out.
Oh,
yeah.
Cut them out every time.
You cut them
out.
See,
every jersey you wore, that came with it?
For the shorts,
a lot of them did,
the
shorts. You cut them out.
So Charlie, I'm guarantee you, Charlie was a sliders guy. Yep. Especially with those big old thighs, because he had to get like extra large sliders with like a mini skinny waist just so his thighs can fit in it. Me, on the other hand, I'd wear banana hammocks. I'd wear like the tidy whities, mm-hmm. but they weren't tidy whities. They were like, maybe you could wear them out to the beach. You could like Christopher Sullivan them later and you can be like, hey, bello.
I knew those guys. Yeah.
I wasn't
one of those guys.
But by saying this, and here's a great mental picture. I'd walk around with my shin guards and my socks on and my boots on. And I'd just put a leg up and be like, hey, what's up, Charlie? How are you, man?
Yep.
How's life? How's the fam?
This worked perfectly in Miami. You were meant to go to Miami.
It met Ian Bishop, it met Jimmy Rooney, Ivan McKinley.
I was just gonna say Ivan McKinley.
It was a house of horrors when it came to it.
So let's just jump right into this thing. By the way, when I bought shorts from the MLS like sample sale, even as recently as a couple years ago, they still all came with the like mesh undershort that you had to cut out. Let's talk Fusion though. We talked to Preki. It was a great team. It was a Supporters Shield winning team. You got there in, what, April, you said, before we jumped on here? Tell me the story of how you got to Miami, and then we'll dig into this squad.
So I made up with Fernando Clavijo afterwards. Had a ton of respect for him before and after, but during, when he was the head coach at the New England Revolution, we didn't always see eye to eye. And it kind of came to a head right when I was about to leave for the Olympics in 2000. And there was this moment where he went on. Remember the Univision 2 o'clock kickoff games on Sunday? Big monster games of the weekend? He said something to the effect of, like, Brian Dunsett doesn't care about the New England Revolution. He only cares about the national team. And for me, that was kind of the moment where I was like, you know what? Like, I don't want to be here anymore. Obviously, you don't think highly enough of me as a human being, much less a player. So let's just go our separate ways.
But he was right?
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't wrong per se. Going to the Olympics was pretty important. But I felt that was a shot that didn't need to be taken at that moment. So fast forward. We go through the first couple games of the season. I'm starting. All of a sudden, I get benched. Finally, I revisit the idea of being traded. Every day, literally every day after practice, I would go get something to eat. I would drive to the New England Revolution offices. I'd knock on the door and I'd be like, hey, Fernando, like, obviously this isn't working. Like, literally every single day. This isn't working. Like, I'd like to be traded. And Fernando would just look at me and goes, Brian, the thing that it is, nobody wants you. Like, literally every day. And so it was this pony. It was like this dance and pony show. Like, I'd want to leave. He would say, nobody wants me. And I'd be like, all right, cool. And I'd walk out literally every day. So finally I get traded for Jay Heaps. It's like early April. I'm downtown in Boston. I'm shopping. I get the phone call. You've been traded. You got to leave tonight. And I'm like jumping for joy. I get down there and Ray's like, Briny, I've been trying to get you for the last year and a half, matey. And I was like, Fernando, no.
Where's your agent in all this? Like, you're doing the legwork. Like, shouldn't there be somebody who's like calling other GMs being like, do you want Brian Dunseth? Because Fernando Clavijo is claiming the thing is nobody wants him. But,
you know, that's a little touchy subject, Weeby, because that is, yes, I did have an agent, a very prominent agent at the time. And yes, I did feel as though he was not getting this deal over the line. Worked out and I was a part of...
Sometimes it seems so simple, yet...
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
Trade me. You're not playing me. Let's do this. Like, what's going on?
Tell me what you walked into with that Miami team, because that's a one-year Preki experiment. It's, Dico Cerna's in that team. Pineda Chacon is in the team.
Yeah.
Tyrone Marshall, Carlos Llamosa, like young Kyle Beckerman, who's not playing at all for them. Yeah. Chris Henderson for a year jumped in. It was a weird team.
So I get down there and John Trask is the assistant coach. Eric Eichmann is the assistant coach. Ray Hudson's the coach. But like I walk in, it's Lazo Alavanya. It's Nicky Raimondo. It's Kyle Beckerman, who had just done his ankle. So he was out for like 6 months. And then you look at that back line, Carlos Llamosa, Pablo Mastroeni, Tyrone Marshall, Ivan McKinley. That's just the competition for the back line spot. In the midfield, you had Preki on the left. You had Chris Henderson on the right. You had Ian Bishop and Jimmy Rooney central. You had Diego Cerna, nut job, love him to death, psychopath, biggest psychopath I've played with, love him to death. Didn't have AC. He tore both his ACLs. Refused to have surgery. Was like the only guy I'd ever met that was playing professional soccer and killing people without ACLs. Wow. And then you had Pineda Chacon, who was like this 130-pound wet little streaky striker that could cut people apart. It was an unbelievable team on and off the field. Unbelievable group of players.
I'm still kind of shocked at the situation. So when you're at training and you're seeing this team and you go into the locker room, who's the guy that you're like striking up conversations with and who's like walking you through, this is how we play, you know, these are their expectations in the locker room and on the field.
Yeah. So I would say that and it's funny, I just talked to Jimmy Rooney, Ian Bishop, and Ivan McKinley in the last 2 weeks. And the stories, oh my God.
Yeah.
Thank God there was no social media.
Let them out.
thank God there was no social media, because the amount, like, you, I think everyone knows back then, like even 2001, it's a different time. So the culture was very British, very, very European. So the training sessions, I'll kind of walk you through what it looked like. First off, we had a Hooters 75% off literal like credit card, and it was a customized. It had our names on it.
Yeah.
So you had like sponsored by Budweiser, and like Hooters was like your afternoon lunch spot. But it didn't cover alcohol. It was only food. By the way, you can oddly eat very healthy at Hooters once you kind of, I know, but you can figure it out after time.
You gotta figure it out. Chicken wings, celery, carrots.
Chicken sandwich, unsmothered. Like you can actually eat somewhat healthy there, but
debatable. The most Florida thing of all time. Debatable.
I'm thinking of it in positive terms.
Yeah, of course.
But when you walk in that locker room, it was, there was a standard set. You had kind of the Irish Jimmy Rooney, Long Island Rough Riders. Okay, we show up to work, lunch pail in hand. Like, we do the business. You had Ian Bishop, who's like, everything's like fun and like laughing and jokes. And all of a sudden the whistle blows and it's like a scissor tackle comes in from nowhere. Mm-hmm. You got Ivan McKinley, who's kind of running around warming up like, oops, guys, I think I'm going to poo my pants. And next thing you know, he's in the corner in the bushes, like catching up to us, sprinting out because he can't make it to the bathroom in time because it was like a 300-yard walk to the soccer field. Then you had like Ray kind of just joking and laughing on the sideline. But then you had John Trask is like the whip master. Like he was like, you go, you train. But I kind of try to tell these stories. It was so much fun. But like when the whistle blew, it was probably the most competitive environment I'd ever been in. I mean, everybody knew, like once you were on the field, like you gave it 2 hours, hour and a half, 2 hours solid work. And then for the rest of the day, you were like, we never went home. We just went with the boys. Like we went to go eat and then we're at the pub. And it was like this real cultural bonding experience of guys who on and off the field kind of became this kind of like combined brotherhood of miscreants and deviants.
That jives with what Preki was telling us. We had him last week talking about Kansas City days and his indoor days and everything else. And he was like, look, the best team, we asked him, is it 2000 Wizards? Is it 2001? Is it maybe later on in your Wizards time? And he said, no, it's 2001 Fusion. That's the best team I've been on. But there were some things that maybe were disappointing to him. He said, I wish there was a little, what was it, Dave? Do you remember? It was a little bit more self-control, a little bit more professional. Yeah. I don't know. It was something like that.
Preki
like,
would say that?
Yeah.
No. In Miami? Said,
no. In Miami? But no I would way. Also say, this is the best about Preki. You know, Preki demanded the ball every single time. And I remember one time I was playing behind him, kind of on the left side. And I bypassed him. He's checking to the ball. And he's like, buddy, give me the effing ball, man. And I like played past him, like into Diego Serna's feet. And it like got into this moment where it's like, he's like, you play me the ball every time. And I was like, well, I'm not going to play it to you if I don't need to play it to you. If the play's on past you, I'm going to break the line, you know, whatever. And afterwards, Ray walks over. He goes, but I knew you're right. But like, that's Preki, man. He's like, I mean, he kind of said it more like, Briny, he's right. It's effing Preki, man, playing the ball, man. I was like, okay, he's right. But like, he's, you know, Preki going yoga or getting a massage, or all of a sudden, like, a truck rolls up and the back opens up and it's like brand new suits for everybody. Like Preki figured out a way to become a part of this group, even though maybe like the culture that he's talking about, that self-restraint, wasn't as professional of an environment that he was maybe looking for at that stage of his career.
Nobody can be Preki. After he was telling us about, I mean, just how many games he played, how many years he played, the situations he was in. But I'm curious, who was the quote unquote alpha in the group? Who was like the guy on top? That was it. Preki? Was it Serna? Was it somebody else? Who sort of was a leader in a everybody respects this person, knows it's them sense? Or was there one?
Yeah, it was Ian Bishop and Jimmy Rooney, I think, combined those two. Because Bish was obviously coming from the Premier League and having played for Man City and having played for West Ham, he kind of had the stature. And he demanded the ball, and it was like a respect thing, and the training sessions are getting stuck in. But I would say Jimmy Rooney, when he spoke, everybody listened to Rooney. Like, he would have fun, but he was so demanding that there was like an accountability within the word. He chose his words wisely. You know, he could bust chops, he can banter, but when he was pissed, all of a sudden it wasn't like Roddy Raw. It was like, all right, let's go. And all of a sudden, like, you were like, yeah, man. Like, you kind of found yourself like setting up, like, okay, let's go. Like, all right, time to play.
So in your mind, Jim Rooney has to be on the Mount Rushmore for Miami Fusion.
No doubt.
No doubt.
No doubt. No doubt.
That's why I knew my list was going to be perfect.
Quick question, because it's a technicality. Mm-hmm. There's no managers that can be on Mount Rushmore?
Nope. No.
No manager.
There's an observation deck for the manager.
And Ray Hudson.
Given the fact that you guys won the Shield and you know, it's the best team in Fusion history. There were only 4 years anyway. He's got to be the head coach. Why don't we just take this opportunity to get the best Ray Hudson story you have? I mean, the man is a... we know him more in these days.
I just know him from announcing. That's it.
As a broadcaster. But he was so much more than that. What was he like as a coach?
He and Clive Charles were the best managers I've ever played for. Hands down. And all due respect to everybody else, I'm just saying, for Ray, I never had one of those coaches in my professional career. Like, I was never like the Richie Williams to like a Bruce Arena or like a Jesse Marsh or Chris Armas to Bradley. Yeah. Like, I never had that coach where it was just security. Like, you knew no matter what, like year comes, year goes, it doesn't matter. Like, he's still like, I'm still going to play. Mm-hmm. And I finally felt like I had that with Ray. And then all of a sudden we get contracted and he's gone. So I would just say from a standard, like the way he makes you felt, like a tactical acumen, there was just something special about Ray. And I still don't think he gets the credit he deserves, because as a man manager and a tactician, I think he matched that very well. And John Trask was a big part of that as well. Ray, there's so many stories on the field, off the field. Here's my favorite one on the field. I still laugh because Tyrone Marshall's out here at Salt Lake, and I still kind of like, I'll yell at Tyrone the same thing Ray said. So all of a sudden we're playing and we're in Lockhart, and I just hear Tyrone, and I kind of like, I know where it's coming from, and I look over and Ray's like pulling his hair out. It's like Doc from Back to the Future. Tyrone. And I look over and I'm like, T. And he goes, I'm not looking. And I was like, you have to look. And T looks over and Ray's like, Tyrone! And he's like, I effing love you, man, but I effing hate you. That to me was just like Ray in the moment. Like, I can't even remember. Like, we've been racking our brains trying to figure out what he was yelling about, but I just remember at that moment he was just going ballistic over something that Tyrone did. And that's just like, you know, walking in the locker room, pregame chat, it said like F, it said the word, it said like F off. Or no, F him. F him. Oh, sorry. F him. It was like F him. F him.
So did he use the same verbiage as a coach that he does as a broadcaster?
So it's the same verbiage with a little bit more colorful swear words involved.
Okay.
But like the things that he would say to you out there, like I came off one game. It was one of my first games. He pulls me aside. He's like, you are like the Statue of Liberty out there. And I'm like, I've never been compared to the Statue of Liberty. So I think that's a good thing.
A rock?
So
on an island? Like what?
It's Ray. I mean, it's everything that he said. His mind works in a different layer of the world. And it's just like, he'll say these things and you're just like, oh, okay. How? What? Oh, okay. It's like thought provoking.
I have a real question with Alex Pineda Chacon.
Okay.
How he was MVP in 2001. Yep. How good was he? Because it's almost like he dropped off the face of the earth. You don't hear about him. No one knows exactly what made him so good or dangerous within the league that during that time. So paint a picture for us.
So I would say he was part of a puzzle. He was part of this really dynamic puzzle. So again, when you think about the back line, you think about Ivan McKinley, Tyrone Marshall, Pablo Mastroianni, Carlos Chamosa, myself, just kind of a part of the back line. In the midfield, Ian Bishop and Jimmy Rooney just sat. They protected. So we played a three-man back line. We played these two kind of sitting and protecting in front. You had Preki on one side. Bish was like a playmaker, but still would get stuck in defensively. You had Hendo, Chris Henderson, flying up and down the wing. And then up top, you had Diego Serna, who's just a bull in a china shop. And then you had Pineda Chacon. The thing about Pineda Chacon, like, he was honestly like 130 pounds, 140 pounds, but he like had these moves, like these little like Cruyff type moves, but they weren't just Cruyff types. He could like literally spin his leg around and chop the ball behind his plant foot and go the different direction and send guys flying by like Top Gun.
Piatti.
He would look to combine. He was like combining left foot, right foot, inside the foot, outside the foot. So technically proficient, and he would want to combine, but at the same time, powerful shot with both feet. He could hit with the inside of his feet, both feet, like kind of curling balls around. And it was almost as if he hid in a way, because you had Preki, because you had Hendo, because you had Serna, because you had Bish. But like, I still think he's up on that Mount Rushmore if you're talking about the best fusion players ever, because to be named, to win all those individual awards within the collective of what that team was, he was valued, I think, by the players that played against him. But for a fan base now, I don't think they realized like how integral of a part he really was within the collective of the success of that team.
I mean, if you look at his career and you kind of go through, it's quick stops. It's 30 games, 40 games, 50 games. And it was really that, it was that one season with Miami where he just blew up. We got a little taste from you there of Diego Serna, bull in a china shop, playing on no ACLs. We just rewind to playing on no ACLs. What does that even mean? Like, how does that work?
He alleges, and I've never seen the medical paperwork, but he alleges that he blew out both of his knees in Colombia, and that instead of having surgery, he didn't believe in the surgery. He would just strengthen the muscles and the tendons around the ACL. So if you saw him every single day, like, we had this really terrible like ghost weight room, but it was like the old like metal plates and like the creaky bench and all that stuff. He was in there every day doing like quad lifts, hamstring curls. And so I mean, I thought he was full of it half the time, but I kind of believed him based on his workout routine because he just had monster legs. And the best part about Diego was, you could tell he wasn't the sharpest knife, but he was so much fun to be around. And he was a bull in the china shop. It was elbows. It was arms. It was hips. He would laugh. He would giggle. He would wind you up. It was all about having fun off the field. But when he was on the field, he was all business. But there were multiple occasions where he would roll up in kind of his little BMW X5. And you would be like, oh, okay, full night out, had a good time. And then there'd be, you know, straight to training. And there'd be other times like, where's Diego? And we'd be like, oh, Diego's in Colombia. Like, what do you mean Diego's in Colombia? I'm like, well, Diego's in Colombia. I guess he'll be back for the game.
So did he have pace?
Explosive pace. Yeah. If he was playing today, I'm trying to think who I could liken him to. He kind of was the size of like a Jaime Moreno, but he had the power of a Mamadou Diallo or an El Tanque Hurtado. He was kind of in between that type of player.
Decent.
But he had, you know, like Stern John, the Stern Turn, or like Woldy Harris, like spinning people. He had that in his back pocket. He was such a well-rounded player, but there were shenanigans with him. And you kind of, because he was so much fun to be around, he was so good, Ray figured out how to kind of manage the individual shenanigans within the collective, because we were all deviants in some way, shape, or form.
So let's get into that. You've mentioned the pub, you've mentioned nightclubs, Colombia, everything that's gone into it. Miami Fusion in Miami, players going out the night before games. What was the vibe? What was the experience as a team? Was it required to be a part of the group? Did Ray Hudson manage the nights out?
So I'll give you, there's a couple of like stories that I always kind of laugh with Ray about, and talking with Ian and Jimmy, you know, like, you remember stories, but like when you hear other people tell the same story, it's like, oh yeah,
you start to pull details and it becomes, you're there again. You needed that little bit of help.
Exactly. So we flew up, it was like, we were going to play on a Saturday night in New York at New Jersey. And we flew up like a Thursday morning.
Ooh, oh boy.
And
oh,
Ray, boy. we're not like going into Jersey. We're going into New York. And Ray's like, I got a surprise for you guys. So we go to Central Park. And a lot of the guys hadn't been to Central Park before, because when you go to play New York, you're usually out in New Jersey. So we get on the bus. Ray's like, bring your watches, bring your phones, bring your wallets, leave your bags. So I'm like, oh, okay, cool. A little walk around or whatever. We like go into the park. We're like 20 minutes in the park. And Ray goes, all right, a little bit of a stretch. So we all like, touch your toes. Everyone touch their toes. Everybody stand up straight. Everybody put your arms up. And then Ray's like, you're done. I don't want to see any of you back in the hotel before 2 a.m.
Duh, what a legend.
And so that means Jimmy Rooney, Ian Bishop, Ivan McKinley, Pablo Mastroianni, myself, Nicky Romando, Lazo Alavagna. We all kind of look at each other and we're like, oh, okay. And it's like, Ray's like, go see the sights. And Ian Bishop to this day will say, the only sights I saw were whatever was out the window of the pub that we were sitting in, because we all went straight to the pub and we played quarters. And we were out until like 1:30 in the morning, like bundling back into cabs, getting back into the hotel. And it was like, unless you had an injury, like that was really the only time you were allowed back at the hotel, because the idea was like to build this like brotherhood, this culture, because we were from all walks of life. I mean, you had American, you had Jamaican, you had Palestine, you had English, you had Irish, Colombian, you had Honduran, you had Preki.
It's his own little... Just Preki.
What was the result on the weekend?
No, we won. Yeah, we won. Yeah. See? I mean, this was also like a time where you would get done with a game. The bus would literally pull into like a liquor store. And there would be like beers coming out and everyone would have a beer and like we'd be going back to the hotel and it would be a game called Moose. It's like you cheers with your left, you drink with your right. And if you do the opposite, if somebody goes like Moose, you had to like chug your beer. And so it was like all these like, it sounds so crazy now. It sounds like a bunch of drunkards and not focused about soccer, but we were runaway. We were runaway in the Eastern Conference before September 11th happened. And even then, I mean, that's a big part of the story in 2001, the playoffs where I felt like we either had red cards or second yellows every single game about the whispers of being contracted. And then ultimately kind of the contraction at the end of the year where all of a sudden, you know, I went in to go get my paycheck and Doug Hamilton and Ray Hudson are like, well, here's your last paycheck from here. You're still going to get paid, but we don't know what's going to happen. We just know that. You know, contraction is happening.
How did it happen that fast? Did you guys know throughout the year that this was going to come, or was it like, hey, we're building something special? We won the Shield playoffs. This didn't work out, but look, this team's going to be back together. We have the core, and then whoosh, gone.
Yeah, it was one of those where we were so good that we knew the whispers, right? We had heard the whispers. Was it going to be Kansas City? Was it going to be Dallas? Was it going to be Tampa? Was it going to be us? Was it going to be all of us? Was it going to be just one of us? Was it going to be a few of us? We kind of knew that Ken Horowitz, the joke was inside the locker room was our trainer, Jaime Rojas, like, Jaime, don't use too many ice bags, or hey, don't use too many rolls of tape today. Ken Horowitz is going to get pissed off. And it was like champagne life on a beer budget. It was like, I own an MLS team, but I don't really have the money to make it work. And yeah, we want to be in Miami, but we're really in Fort Lauderdale. Mm-hmm. You know, like we kind of knew all that. There was conversations at all times, but it was also one of those like, if we win MLS Cup, there's no way they can contract us. If we make it to an MLS Cup final, there's no way, right? And so we just start blasting people in the playoffs, just blasting people. We blasted Kansas City in Kansas City. You know, we felt like all we needed was a result at home against San Jose. But in the midst of this, it's like red card, second yellow. Ian Bishop's not available. You know, Pablo's not available. And it started to feel like the conspiracy theory was in our locker room. Well, they don't want us to win. Let's still figure out, you know, it's going to be this egregious call against us. Well, screw it. Let's still, based on scoring goals, like let's just win. And then when we fell short in the dying moments of that game against San Jose after Ian Bishop got the red card, Bish gets the red card for a tackle. He didn't even touch anybody. What I mean, yellow at worst. I mean, red card, Ian takes his jersey off and like throws it like at the ref. That's how like furious he was. Mm-hmm. And I just remember being in the locker room afterwards, missing out on a chance to go to Columbus to play the Galaxy in the final. And all of us kind of like well, I guess they got what they wanted, right? Now it makes it easy for the fusion to be contracted. And listen, now I look back and it's all conspiracy theory, but in the moment, that's how we had kind of like galvanized the bond of the player of, if everybody's against us, let's make it impossible for them to kind of be worst case scenario. But yeah, after the season, we rolled back into the training facility and all of a sudden it was like, yeah, we're gone. We don't know what's going to happen. We think you're going to go into some type of supplemental draft and who knows? And then everyone, you know, Ray went to DC, Doug Hamilton went to the LA Galaxy, you know, and the players kind of started breaking apart and some thrived with new teams. Others, like you were talking about Pineda Chacon or Diego Serna, others ended up on teams where maybe for a year or two it worked. And all of a sudden, you know, those are the last couple of games they ever played in MLS.
We're doing Extra Time's greatest team of all time bracket. And we have auto qualifiers, the best team from all 24 outside the two new expansion teams this year. We have at-large bids. Okay. I feel like right now we can just make the decision that the 2001 Miami Fusion, because they came up short, or maybe a sketchy call on Bish, you know, whatever it might be, let's get them into that bracket. We need to have a little bit of fusion energy there. We're talking Rushmores. Who do we have so far? We have
Diego Serna.
We have Pineda Chacon. Pineda Chacon. Was it Bishop in there that you also had?
No, see, no, Carlos Jim Rooney.
So, you have Jim Rooney. I think I'm going to throw a wild card in.
All right.
Okay.
A wild card, because on and off the field, I think he's one of those guys that deserves legend status. Okay. I got to nominate Ivan McKinley. I have to. Because I know guys like Rooney and Bish and Raimondo and Yamosa and even Pablo Mastroianni, Preki. I mean, all these guys deserve it. There's no doubt. But the legendary status of Ivan McKinley, both on and off the field, I think overshadows what a great player he was. Because that left foot, he still has one of the best left pegs that I've ever seen in Major League Soccer. But it's kind of the toughness, the tackles, the elbows on Paul Caligiuri or Miles Joseph that kind of hang in the air of, he's a dirty player. Mm-hmm. Ivan McKinley, legend status off the field, I think, comes into play into this conversation as well.
Well, that's part of it. That's part of it. It's the complete package.
I gotta nominate. He probably won't make it, but I gotta nominate Ivan McKinley in this, because if you want a legendary night out, Ian Bishop, Jimmy Rooney, and Ivan McKinley are the coattails that you want to follow around town.
Okay. Who are your four?
So I would say I would go with Alex Pineda Chacon, mm-hmm. 19 goals, 4 assists.
That's your number one.
MVP in a 4-year you know, run for a team. I think you got to be on there.
So that's my number one. I'm going to go Jimmy Rooney, the captain, the heart and soul of that team.
Two.
I'm going to put Ivan McKinley in this group. I have to.
Okay.
I have to. Now here's where I'm torn. Is it Ian Bishop or is it Diego Serna?
It's got to be Serna, though, doesn't it? Just for longevity's sake. I mean, Bishop was there. He was there for 1 year, right? Or like maybe one
Diego
and a half.
Diego Serna was like...
But he was so good.
I get it, but
Serna played 100 games.
So scored 52 goals.
Leading goal scorer. Yeah,
I would go Serna. I would go Serna, and I hate to do this to Janusz Michalik. I'm going to go Serna for one reason and one reason alone.
Uh-oh.
I can remember playing one of those Sunday Univision games with the New England Revolution. Walter Zenga's behind me. Dan Kalichman's next to me. Janusz Michalik is on the left. So it's Kalichman. I'm on like the left center back. Mahalik's on the left. Somehow the ball gets played over the top and we're chasing Diego Serna. And Janusz is trying to like go with Alex Pineda Chacon. There's a chop. And I'm not going to say who got chopped, but it wasn't me. But it was a goalkeeper. It was a goalkeeper that got chopped at the top. And then Janusz is sprinting. And Diego looks back at Janusz and slowly passes the ball into the net. But passes the ball at a pace where he's winding Janusz up so tight that Janusz thinks he can get to it, right? Janusz is huffing and puffing. It's like 20 minutes in. Janusz left-footed slide tackle misses the ball to hook slide it off the line somehow, like Kobe Joneses it into the net, like that photo shoot for the 2002 World Cup. He's hanging in the net and there's the camera is on him. The next day we're watching the video, Walter Zenga pauses it, Janusz is hung up on the net, and you just see his eyebrows, they're just like, like just exhausted. gutted. And that's like my forever memory of Diego, is just like, it was such a dick move to play the ball so slowly to where Janusz thought he had a chance to hook slide it out. And so, yeah, I'll go Serna. Yeah, okay. It's got to be Serna.
Oh, man. Only 4 years.
That wins it for me.
Only 4 years did the Miami Fusion last, but what a glorious 4 years. We could have talked about Lockhart, so many different things. Donnie,
can we throw that in there at the end?
Yeah, go for it.
Can we do Why one? Not? Do you have any Lockhart love, memories, sadness now? Because it is finally sort of gone.
So I can't. So there were these palettes outside of Lockhart. So let me paint the picture. Old Lockhart Stadium, painted a bunch of different colors. People forget, if you look at the average attendance for 2001, that season, the home field attendance, it was like 15 to 17,000. Like, it was up there, surprisingly up there. That was another thing that we thought, well, we're getting a good run right now. The fans are here. Why would they ever contract? But outside the stadium, there was like this, it was a parking lot, but in the parking lot were all these pallets. It was like pallets for concessions, and it could be like sodas, and I forget, like, it wasn't Sprite and it wasn't Mountain Dew, whatever the soda was.
2001, it was like
Sierra Mist.
Good shout.
I knew that one. Easy.
Here's a tougher pull. Here's a tougher pull. There was a brand of, like, it was like a Yoo-hoo Nesquik type of brand. It was like a chocolate milk.
Ovaltine?
And it was green, and Valderrama was on all of them. Oh. And I can't remember. But anyways, there were all these pallets.
Trivia
outside.
Question.
And I remember, like, I loved the chocolate milk. I'd mix it with, like, the protein shake. So, like, we were taking some of these, like, pallets of chocolate milk, these boxes, home. But we only did it once because we didn't realize at the time. We're like, oh, man, it's like Gatorade type. Like, it's Powerade. Like, you can bring it home and drink it. Like, you know, you could take it home. You didn't have to buy it. We forgot I'd been sitting out in that South Florida sun. I poured one of those, whatever they call it, like chocolate milk Valderramas, into like the blender. It was like chunks. It was like curdled chunks. So yeah, that's my memory of, that's like my lasting memory of Lockhart, because the Baltimore Orioles preseason venue, like, that was their training, preseason training stadium, was our locker room for the entire year. So when preseason showed up, we had to move to a different part, but it was like across the other parking lot. And then we would train like out in the outfield, the fields in the very, very back. But yeah, Lockhart, I don't know, it's still a special place, but from all the imagery, from the knockdown imagery to what they're building now, I can't wait to get down there and see what Inter Miami CF has been.
Yeah, it's not curdled milk anymore, Donnie. Tell people how they can catch you these days. Sirius.
Sirius XM, channel 157, Counterattack, Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Just having fun, doing interviews, catching up with people. Guys, I appreciate the time reminiscing about the Miami Fusion.
Yeah, man. It's always great to talk to you, Donnie.
Same, guys.
Always.
All right, thanks to Donnie. We got three. Diego Serna, he of no ACLs, but many, many goals. Alex Pineda Chacon, an MVP, no doubt about that one. And then I think Jim Rooney put him on there. Dunny knows better than we do, and certainly better than I do. It's too bad we can't have Preki, Pablo Mastroianni, or Nick Raimondo. All those guys went on to become legends and Mount Rushmore locks for their respective teams down the line. I'm going to open this up for you, Doyle. I'm going to give you the opportunity to make a choice for this, because I never saw the Fusion play. I don't have any place to talk here. I'm going to recuse myself from this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I understand Dunny making the case for Ivan McKinley, but Ivan McKinley, he's more of a, like, a cult hero type of guy rather than a Mount Rushmore type of guy. Ian Bishop, there's a good, like, in terms of 1 year, Ian Bishop was awesome. And he was, like, if you think back to those West Ham teams, and West Ham, everybody knows him because of the fans and Green Street and Hooligans and all that crap, but, like, West Ham has a reputation in England of being a team that actually play a little bit and use the ball. And in the 90s, McKinley was a huge part, or not McKinley, Ian Bishop was a huge part of that. He has a case. Carlos Llamoso was best 11 that year. He has a case as well, but it was, again, it's only the 1 year. For me, the fourth guy should be Henry Gutierrez. Henry Gutierrez was the playmaker in 98, 99, and in 2000. He has, I think, the second most games in Fusion history behind Diego Serna, and he was good. Like, he wasn't quite best 11, but he wasn't far off. I think he had, like, 8 goals, 15 assists 1 year. He was a borderline U.S. national team player. I think he got one cap under Bruce, and he shouldn't be forgotten. He was probably the best player on the team for the first 3 years. They made playoffs, two of those. He wasn't a part of the 2001 team, and that 2001 team is maybe my favorite team in MLS history because they just played such gorgeous soccer, and I loved hearing Dunny's stories about it. But that is not the only team in Fusion history. You have to honor the teams that came beforehand. Henry Gutierrez was the biggest part of that, so I think he's on Mount Rushmore.
I'm sold. He's from Hoboken, so my vote was automatically down, so Doyle sold me.
I'm for Carlos Hermosa, but I'll give it to Doyle.
Yeah. I guess I'm really convincing today. Let me just say one more thing about the 2001 team. And that was a great interview you guys had with Dunny. That year's best 11, 5 players from that best 11 were from the Miami Fusion. 5 players. Preki was on this Miami Fusion team. He was like the 3rd best attacker. Like, it was insane how good and how fun this team was. And like, as great as Pineda Chacon was, 19 goals, 9 assists, and it's bizarre because he was never really a striker for Honduras. He was more of an attacking midfielder, but Ray had him playing kind of like this drifting fox in the box, almost false 9 at times. Diego Serna was the MVP of that team. Diego Serna was the MVP of that year. He had 15 goals and 15 assists in like 24 games. You put that in like today, it's like, that's like Giovinco level production. Yeah. And obviously it's a different team and it's a different era. And I'm not saying he would put up those types of numbers today, but like that team played gorgeous soccer. Serna was the best player on that team. And I think on the Miami Fusion Mount Rushmore, you make his head a little bit bigger than everybody else's.
Down for it. Down for it. I'll accept that. We've got it set. Do we put these two best teams, the 96 Mutiny team and the 2001 Fusion team, into our greatest team of all time bracket? Can we call them at large bids, or do we want to wait for next Thursday when we finalize?
I think they have to.
I would say they're at large. Yeah.
Like the 96 Mutiny team, they were the original best team, and forget David Beckham. Carlos Valderrama was the original DP in this league. He meant a ton. He was the original MVP as well. They have to be in there for that. Miami Fusion, that 2001 team, has to be in there because they were that good. They were legitimately that good. Like Mastroeni, Hermosa, those are World Cup players. Ian Bishop, we know what he did. Jim Rooney is like super underrated player. Chris Henderson, a World Cup player. Like, yeah. The list goes on and on with that team. So they are absolutely 100% in this best team of all time, bro.
And the Mutiny kit is an at-large bid as well. Because that kit is fire.
All right, I'm down with that. So we have 6 at-large bids left. 401-206-0MLS, extratime at MLSsoccer.com. Nominate the teams you want to see in this greatest team of all time bracket. We will send out who has already qualified via the social medias at Extra Time on Twitter. And then we'll have that debate on Thursday along with MLS Mount Rushmore, the all-time Mount Rushmore for this league, which is going to be a pretty salty debate if Charlie's mood from today is any indication. Just bring that to Kalen, Charlie, and then we'll have a great show on
Charlie,
Thursday.
Charlie, how many children have you told to get off your lawn this morning?
None today.
2, his own children. Yeah, right.
I did want to throw out there, Andres Martinez sent in an email with his Mount Rushmore for Miami. So he had Ray Hudson, Serna, Pinedo Chincon, and then Leo Cullen. And then because Pablo Mascherini was not eligible, he replaced him with Jay Heaps. We got to throw those names in there as well.
Yeah, no.
Well, there you go. Leo Cullen the played fans, a lot of games.
I hope the fans feel like they have a good voice in all of this. We mention it, and then Doyle just goes, no.
What do you want me to say? There's bad suggestions.
Who do we got for Chivas? Brad Guzan, who can't be there. You're wearing the Chivas shirt, Charlie, Question. So maybe you should get us started here. Yeah,
I'll get us started here. Sasha Question.
Carlos Vela. Eduard Etuet. Oh, wait. Oh, sorry. Chivas 1.0. Oh, sorry.
I'm going. Sasha Question.
Yep.
1. Kubo Torres.
No.
Put him on. He was banging goals when that team was trash. Okay. I'm going Claudio Suarez because Dunseth got it, hit the nail on the head. This club was started with the premise of Mexican and Americans and coming together, bringing, you know, having that massive Chivas club in Mexico and teleporting it to LA and having that, you know, the fan base be so strong. Claudio Suarez was, he said, arguably one of the best defenders in MLS, not because he was over the hill with his athleticism, but because of his ability to read the game. So put him there. And then Ante Razov, you have Ante Razov, Dan Kennedy, and Jonathan Bornstein. Ah, boy.
To me, Johnny Bornstein, to me, he's there because he was there for all the best years. Yep. I think he has to be there. He's a rookie of the year. He's a, to me, he's there. So I'm with you on El Emperador. Like, you got to have Claudio Suarez. He was mm-hmm. kind of the basis of the early yep. concept and the soul of the club. And he's a foundation. Legend. And mm-hmm. this team doesn't look, it was a team that went kaput after not that many years and didn't have the best of, let's call it form during many of those years. So I think you have three shoo-ins there. I think you have Kleschen, Suarez, and Bornstein. And then to me, big debate on the fourth.
Yes, I agree with you, Weeby. And like Jonathan Bornstein, for those couple of years, he was the best left back in the league. And he was literally best 11. And fullbacks never make best 11. But in 2007, Johnny Bornstein was there. And to me, one of the big what ifs is like, what if instead of transferring to a Liga MX team that never played him and never had any intention of playing him, he went to a place where he would actually play soccer from 2010 to 2015. But it's, we'll do a what if extra time at some other point, but Bornstein has to be there. To me, the fourth, look, you're right, Charlie. Kubo had a good year and a half. I mean, for teams that were terrible.
Terrible.
Ante Razov had a good 2.5 years for teams that were pretty good. Like, so I think of the two of them, just because Ante was on the better team and he was a bigger part of it, Ante's got the better argument.
I'm okay with it. I'm okay with Ante. I'm not going to argue. There's some names I will argue till the death. Mm-hmm. But with Ante Razov on Mount Rushmore, I still feel comfortable.
Charlie, I got you, dude. I got your energy. Okay. It's Nick LaBroca. MLS All-Star, central midfielder. The team was going down. Someone needed to carry the load.
All right, you need to stop.
And you
right
put
now.
It on the hunched shoulders of a New Jersey man, a Nick LaBroca, and he carried a stop group. It.
Throw in Justin Braun.
Braun had some game.
Those two names, I will argue all day.
Can we throw in?
Give me Dan about, Kennedy. Give me Dan Kennedy. Give me Ante Razov.
What about Sueño?
No, Sueño was not good there.
I know, it's just messing.
Yeah. I will say Dunny brought back a bunch of Univision references on the weekend games and all that, and I can still remember Juan Pablo Garcia and Paco Palencia signed.
They had them
interviewed during the game while they were playing. It was chaos across the board, but I was here for it.
I remember
Paco Palencia, a good player, not a good Chivas USA player.
All right. So do we have any sort of consensus there as we just... I mean, you could throw Jesse Marsh in there?
Zach Thornton was goalkeeper of the year in 2009 for Chivas USA.
He was. He only played the 2 years, though.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I think for sure you can put Jesse Marsh in the combo.
Yeah.
Jesse Marsh has to get mentioned. He was a part of the good teams. Was he captain
the
first
Rushmore.
Year?
It's not Mount Rushmore. No,
not Mount
it's
Rushmore. Not,
you guys, yeah. you're stretching. Not Mount Rushmore. It's
you are
two
doing
names.
A Mount Rushmore for Chivas USA, Charlie. This is a stretch.
Yep.
Nope. The entire concept of this Mm-mm. segment is a nope. stretch. It started at a stretch. Mm-mm.
If this was around the horn, you'd get that big right there.
Here's what we do instead. We don't pick one and we just do it Chalice style where it's just a mystery person wearing a wolf mask and nobody knows who it is, but whoever's in their heart, that's who that player becomes.
No, I'm with Doyle.
I think like Razov, 76 games, 30 goals is pretty good.
I'm jumping on Doyle with Razov.
Wait, did we put Dan Kennedy down as the first three or no?
No.
We don't have Dan Kennedy in the first three. No.
Interesting. My Alexa is now talking because I brought up Dan Kennedy.
Yeah, well, I feel like Dan Kennedy gets like an honorary award for sort of suffering through just misery. Like the years that he was there and starting, he was the only, remember, he was like the only thing, and he was the only, he would, they'd trot him out for every media, anytime. And Dan be like, I don't know what the hell's going on here, man. Chalice is crazy. This is weird. Oh, like, we're trying to figure this out on the fly. I'm like good with Razov because we kind of stiffed him on the Chicago side.
I agree.
And I feel like, you know, goal scorer for the best teams that they had.
Yeah.
Do we put a Chivas team in the greatest team of all time? Or do we save that as an at-large bid?
No chance.
Yeah, I'm on the no chance boat too. That's
their best team was 07. Mm-hmm. 53 points. A decent, like a plus 18 goal differential. They won the West in the regular season by a point over the Dynamo, who would go on to win MLS Cup. It was a good team. That first team under Preki was a good team. But like I don't feel.
But
really
would you
necessary.
Choose them given all the options you have for six at large bids? Would you choose that team? I don't think that you would.
I don't think so. No.
So not going in there.
Not even close.
And Preki goes down for manager.
Yes.
Because Bob can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
All right. Chivas USA, your short history. We've wrapped it up here in about 7 minutes. All right. On Thursday, we're doing the MLS all-time Mount Rushmore, and we're going to finalize our greatest team of all-time bracket. We're working on how that's going to work with the voting and the cadence. We'll let you know as soon as we know. Any final thoughts, guys, before we chuck up the deuces and get out of here?
Yeah, I'm going to throw out one, David Inskokie, who goes on the ETR Mount Rushmore, legendary emailer, and he gave some advice, which I think we can go with, which is who's been most hard done via the nature of the Mount Rushmore. For example, guys who weren't one-man clubs, a la a Tony Meola, a Kai Kamara. So we may have to throw that Mount Rushmore together of Mount Rushmores of guys who didn't get on Mount Rushmores.
I mean, Carlos Ruiz.
Yeah, but
Carlos Ruiz is the big one, right?
Carlos Ruiz for sure. But you got to think, not just because they played on multiple clubs, like they have to warrant, like,
what do you mean? Rushmore. Carlos Ruiz doesn't warrant Mount Rushmore?
I said, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, that's the point, though. But there are there are multiple guys who go down as something like that. Because Doyle kept nixing anyone who got traded ever for any reason.
That's true. No, that's not true. You're just making stuff up.
Like Adama Duro played for like how many teams? 10
teams.
Did you just throw Adama Duro?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
What?
Like he doesn't get on
it. Adama Duro gets on the VCU Mount Rushmore. So, facts. Hard facts.
I think that's a pretty good spot to leave this, guys. 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Hit us with your at-large bids. At extra time, we'll throw out the already qualified teams so you know who's into the greatest team of all time bracket, and we'll go from there. Try to finalize it on Thursday. And then, I don't know, have a new, you know, that's it for the Rushmores apart from MLS. What's do you feel sad? Does anybody feel sad? Shtick. It's almost over. I can't believe we did all this. I've been, the amount of research that I've done in the last month and a half is
best
silly.
11s for every team coming up by Andrew Weavy.
Oh, don't even commit me to that. We're out of here. See you on Thursday, everybody. We'll be right back.